You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, and we are back. It is something like 8 degrees here and outside Philadelphia. And more, what's the temperature where you are?
Earlier today, it was negative 30 Celsius with the wind chill.
Let's see what.
So it was cold. Right now, it is. Let me look it up. I want weather, please. Right now, it is minus 11 Celsius, and with the wind chill, it's minus 19.
Damn, minus 11 is 12 degrees. Okay, so that's about what it is here. That's still pretty cold, still.
It's still cold.
Still cold, man.
Got to keep warm.
So, listen, one thing to think about, and I was thinking about this yesterday, is yes. So Trump is now president. That sucks, man. It sucks real bad.
Really does.
So, I mean, Em, are we going to, like, on one hand, I'm like, well, maybe we shouldn't always talk about politics on the Punk News Podcast. But on the other hand, politics is intrinsically linked with punk. And Punk News definitely is not one of these websites where, like, it's, you know, we keep politics out of the music. No, we keep politics in the music. And we're definitely not one of these weird punk websites that is weirdly pro-Trump or pro, you know, far-right, which exists and is totally weird and means you don't understand punk at all. But on the other hand, I don't want it to be doom and gloom every week. You know what I mean, Em? So how do we balance that? What are we going to do? Do we just bring it up when it feels relevant and not when it doesn't? You know what I mean? If we were Maximum Rock and Roll, we would talk about it every week. But on the other hand, Maximum Rock and Roll, there's a lot of things I like about Maximum Rock and Roll, a lot of things I don't like. I feel like Maximum Rock and Roll is a lot of talk and no real result because of that talk, you know? So what do we do, Em? How often do we touch on politics? Is it just as we feel like it? Should we limit it to every other week? What do you think?
It's like unavoidable, you know? A lot of the stuff we're talking about just on the podcast in general has some tie to some politics somewhere, somehow, like exactly like what you're saying, punk's inherently political. So I think it's one of those things we can't avoid it. Like we can't not talk about it. We can't, you know, not face it in that way. And like to keep things being doom and gloom, that's what they want, you know, like that's what I keep in mind. Cause it's how does a society crumble? It crumbles through the apathy of its citizens. They don't, if they're not paying attention, if they're not active and then they're not engaged, laws will pass, mandates will be put in place, people's rights will be taken away. If you don't speak up, then you're next, kind of thing. So that's what they want. They want you to lose hope. They want you to become apathetic, but there's always hope. It doesn't matter how dark things are. There's always hope. Like how many empires have risen and fallen? You know what I mean? Like how many cycles of history has a human race kind of lived through, you know? And that's not to minimize what's going on now by any stretch of the imagination, but just to be like, there is hope in the dark places. So I think when we talk about politics, talking about that and talking about like maybe things that we can do to like help out or something. So it's not just we're not just like, you know, just talking about stuff. We're giving. We have an action sort of component.
I think that's a great answer. I agree 100%. I
thanks. That's,
well said. Well said indeed. Okay, there we go. There's our answer.
I solved answer. It.
There we go. M solved it. And speaking of solving things, we're back to playing music, and we're probably going to be playing music again for a while. So the freestyle era perhaps is now concluded, and there's probably going to be a freestyle episode here and there. But we're back to the regular Punk News Podcast style. So here we go. Ooh. This is Scal's new song. The song is called Not Hell, Not Heaven, and it's off their brand new upcoming album, Are We All Angels, out April 4 via Dead Oceans. Let's go.
Cabin.
talk about the new Scowl video, the new Scowl song, and the relation of this song in contrast to the last Scowl single, which opens.
It is completely different than the first single, which was Special, and or that's what it was called. It was called Special. And it had more of a like nu metal kind of 90s alt rocky type vibe. And this one is more kind of like power pop, power punk, like that kind of vibe. So it is extremely catchy. I was listening to it before the podcast. And the chorus is just gets in my head. The part, like, there's layered vocals, which are really, really rad. And there's a couple parts where, like, Kat Moss's voice is like quiet and like not talking, but like going kind of fast, and it like matches the music and it just sounds so cool. The video is fun too. A lot of it is like clips of the band playing at 924 Gilman. So they have like that live energy, they have the crowd going, like all this kind of stuff. And then that's intercut with just kind of shots of Kat Moss in various locations, you know, kind of having an existential crisis, and then destroying her makeup at one point, and everything. And it ends with Snoopy and Woodstock. It looks like it's on a shirt, and it says happiness is being one of the gang. So I thought that was kind of fun. I enjoyed the song. I'm really looking forward to the album because the way the song ends, because it's just like, it's done. Like, it's so abrupt, you know? So it's like, okay, that's going to go directly into another song, and that's going to sound so cool together. You know what I mean? So I think it'll be a really interesting album. I think songs like Special are going to be in the minority. And I think songs like Not Hell, Not Heaven are probably going to like be the majority of the album, just with that's just my feeling on it. And yeah, the album's called Are We All Angels, which always proofread your work, because when I typed it up the first time, I had Are We All Angles, which is not correct. John, what do you think of this Scowl song?
Yeah, I dug this a lot. This is what I was hoping for when we first heard Special, which I'm still not, you know, like, maybe my perspective will be different once I hear the whole album. I was not that, like I said before, I was not down with the nu metal angle. And I witnessed nu metal the first time around, and it was not a pretty scene. And anytime I hear something like that, I think of that famous, not famous, that hilarious B.A. Johnson song. What's it called? Fanny Pack or something? You know the song I'm talking about? Skinny Jeans. And he's like, and I love Sublime, but he's got a hilarious line. He's like, I remember Sublime from the first time around, you know. And I was thinking that, you know, especially I wasn't blown away by. I like this track a lot. I was actually surprised in the context. I thought that they were going to put out like a straight up pop song. And this is much more power pop, pop punk, or modern rock type song, I guess, if you will. But I dug it. I think Kat Moss is a great singer. I think the band has a great, the music's real good too. I love Kat's lyrics, and I love like her lyrics are kind of abstract, and it's one of those kind of ones where you can kind of guess what she's talking about, but it's not always exactly clear. And I also like how she puts like a metaphysical angle on a lot of things that you're not clear she being literal or she being metaphorical. You know, Not Hell, Not Heaven. And the name of the album, I think, is cool. Are We All Angels? And I like how it's kind of trippy and kind of spaced out. Kind of Fleetwood Mac-ish in that. Well, not Fleetwood Mac-ish. Kind of Stevie Nicks-ish in that way, which I dig. I think that's real cool. So this track gave me a lot of hope for this album. I think it sounds good. And I hope a lot of the tracks are like this or are hardcore or are straight up pop. So we'll see. We'll see, Em. It'll be really interesting to see if Scowl explodes and becomes gigantic, or if they go on a different trajectory. And for many bands, right now is the most difficult hurdle. You know what I mean? To go from buzz to permanent, that's a difficult hurdle. So I hope Scowl makes it, but we'll see. We'll see. And I always feel like, and I could be wrong, I always feel like when bands fail that hurdle, it's when someone else is whispering in their ear. You know, like In my experience, usually, not always, but usually, record execs and even producers aren't really good at like making good music, frankly. You know, now there are certain, some producers are good at helping a band achieve their vision. But when producers kind of throw in their own two cents, that maybe isn't the band's vision, or record execs. And I don't know if that's the case here, but things tend to go awry because record execs and even producers tend to think in terms of what worked before. Whereas I think if you're really trying to get to that next level, what worked before isn't going to work. What's next is going to work. Not that I'm a huge Billie Eilish fan, but no one sounded like Billie Eilish before Billie Eilish, you know? I mean, there's traces of things, but Billie Eilish is pretty unique sounding, you know? And I'm not really a Tyler, the Creator fan, but like Tyler, the Creator is extremely unique, you know? So to kind of jump through for a band that is a buzz band or a hit band like Scal, I just hope there's not too many people in the pot, stirring the pot. And I hope they are able to trust in themselves, and they're allowed to trust in themselves to create what's special about them, not what's special about other bands, if you will.
Yeah, no, that's well put.
So we shall see. So anyway, this is cool. I dug this track. Here's something else that's real cool. I mean, there's not a whole lot to talk about here, but this is rad as hell. Billy Idol and Joey are going on tour, and I am extremely psyched. I've seen Billy Idol before. I saw him at the WMMR barbecue where Vixen 77 opened, one of their best bars ever.
That's cool.
And Billy Idol was the friggin' man. I mean, like, he comes out, he's still Billy Idol, you know, like, you know, if you go see, I mean, I've sort of done this rap before, but if you go see, like, I don't really like Eric Clapton, but if you go see Eric Clapton, you're like, who's that on stage? You know what I mean? Like, what? You know, or if you go see, like, I love Colin Hay. I love Men at Work. But when you go see Colin Hay solo, it's James Taylor on stage. It's not Men at Work, if you follow me, you know? But when you go see Billy Idol, it is Billy Idol. He's got the black leather jacket on. He sounds like Billy Idol. I got to say, his news, he put out two EPs within the past 5 years, which for him is very recent. And honestly, they're both pretty good. They're both really good, honestly. I like them a lot. And so when he plays the new songs, it fits in kind of right with the kind of the classic stuff. But it doesn't feel like an old – here's what I'm – when you go see Billy Idol, it doesn't feel like an oldies act. It feels timeless. You know what I mean? And it's awesome. Also, like he's just got that natural charisma. Like when they did White Wedding, when I saw him, he pointed at Steve Severin, his guitar player since the beginning of the Billy Idol, the band. And he goes, "Steve, show him what a hit sounds like." And then they played White Wedding and everyone went crazy. And it was cool, you know. And plus, Joan Jett is, I guess, co-headlining, but really opening. And I'm extremely psyched because I've had a few opportunities to see Joan Jett, but I haven't ever seen her. I'm a huge Joan Jett fan. A lot of the reason why I haven't seen Joan is because she's been opening for like Motley Crue I'm not going to pay $250 to see a 25-minute Joan Jett set, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, this is yet another total John package. Billy Idol and Joan Jett in the summer. And I'm definitely going to be there. Let's see. Philadelphia, August 16th, kind of close to my birthday, at the wonderful Mann Center. Great sound, open air venue, very cool place, where I wanted to see Ween before they broke up, but unfortunately they broke up before that, where I also did see King Crimson and Roxy Music and Tegan and Sarah. No, I didn't see Tegan and Sarah there, but I saw Roxy Music and King Crimson there, and it was rad. I saw Vampire Weekend when I was covering it for Rolling Stone. Still not a Vampire Weekend fan, but I am a Billy Idol and Joan Jett fan, and this is going to be awesome. Em, does this look awesome to you?
This looks like it's going to be a really great show. It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. The video announcement that they did for it, or I guess just Billy Idol did for it, was really funny.
But it had a surprise guest at the end.
Yes, Joan Jett was in it.
The video I thought was funny, but it's a little drawn out. And, you know, there was a comedian, Matt Rife, who we were talking about before. And I was annoyed because Matt Rife just announced like a giant tour. And his poster is an homage to Billy Idol's Rebel Yell album cover, which annoyed me. But, you know, and then Matt Rife is in this video now. So it kind of makes sense. And I guess they pinged off each other. And so
which one's Matt Rife?
He's like the guy that keeps appearing and like saying Billy Idol lyrics. So in the video, like Billy Idol's like doing stuff throughout his day, and Matt Rife keeps appearing and like referencing Billy Idol lyrics, and Billy Idol like thinks he's freaking out. And then he sees Joan Jett, and Joan Jett's like, "Let's go on tour," or whatever. And it's a funny video, which it just goes to show Billy, to his credit, Billy Idol knows that he's Billy Idol, both in that he knows that, you know, he knows that he's not, you know, a contemporary act that like everyone loves. Like he's comfortable embracing the 80s aspect, but also he's secure enough that he knows that he's Billy Idol and he knows that he rocks way more than 99.9999% of other artists. And so he has the confidence without being cocky, I guess, that he's Billy Idol and he can have fun with the idea of being Billy Idol. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Like he's not taking himself too seriously, but he and knows plus, his identity.
And plus, we don't understand Joan Jett.
Joan Jett's awesome.
Joan Jett is friggin' awesome. I'm so excited to see Joan Jett. The thing is,
Joan Jett kicks ass.
Billy Idol's not a spring chicken, although for his age, he looks pretty good. But he's got like a 45-year-old son or a 40-year-old son or maybe something like that. And what about like being Billy Idol's son? Like, you can never be as cool as your dad. Like, you know what I mean? Like I think most people feel like they're cooler than their parents, although maybe not everybody does. I don't know. But like, what do you think? Like you'll never even be 1/10 as cool as your dad. Like, what do you do there? You know, it's like when your dad's like Paul McCartney, like, oh, your dad's the most famous songwriter ever. Like, great. You know, what can I do? You know, like.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I do think Billy Idol has a bit of a persona, and I don't think he's the same person
You think like if you were like let's say you're Billy Idol's childhood friend and you're still friends with Billy Idol now, you think it's like mostly a different person, or the Billy Idol on stage is a very much a caricature of the real person?
I think more like the person on stage is just exaggerated.
Mm-hmm.
When you said that, it was just funny because all I was picturing was like him and his son having like a cool off, you know, like they're both like modeling the leather jackets, like who looks better. But yeah, like in kind of the wider sphere of it, ooh, I don't know, like that, it would feel so weird to have like a famous parent.
It would. It'd be real weird.
Oh, yeah.
One, I guess, of the more notable successes would be Duncan Jones. And you know who Duncan Jones is, right?
That's Steve Jones's.
No, that's David Bowie's son. He's a famous director. He did Where the Wild Things Are and a bunch of other stuff. Because, of course, David Bowie's real name is David Jones. And so his son is Duncan Jones, who was born Zowie Bowie, and then he changed his name to Duncan, which I think was a good move. You win some sort of contest, right?
Okay.
And you get to spend 5 hours with either Joan Jett or Billy Idol, and they have to answer any question you ask them. Who do you pick?
Oh, that's tough. I think I'd go Joan Jett.
Why?
I think she'd have really interesting stories, and she'd just have a really interesting perspective on life and music and the music industry and kind of the whole thing. I think it would be a really interesting experience, and I'd like to know how she feels that things have changed, or if they have, and kind of what her relationship with her fame and stuff is. Because I feel, and like we've talked about it a little bit, like, because you know, you talked about interviewing her and stuff, like she seems like a very private person. It'd just be interesting to see how she's been able to kind of keep that as long as she has.
Joan Jett is one of the most difficult interviews there is, because as I said before, like she doesn't give up anything personal. I guess some people don't want to talk about, you know, divorces or their kids, or I get that, you know what I mean? But I remember I asked her, she wrote a song that benefited hurricane relief when the East Coast got hit by some bad hurricanes. And I'm like, so Joan, like, why is that like really personal to you, knowing that she's got a house in New Jersey somewhere, or she did? And her answer was, we really wanted to write a rock song that would move people. So we wrote one in 4/4 time, you know, on the key of C, and we wanted to something that people could really sink into. And I'm like, thanks. That gives me a lot to work with. Thanks a lot. You know, you wanted to write a song. Thanks, Joan, you know.
A moving song.
So, see, with Joan, is you can ask her all about being in The Runaways, which I'm sure was insane. You can ask her about Hollywood early 70s. You can ask her about hanging out with Alice Cooper and all those people. You can ask her about the Cult of the 70s. You can ask her about being friends with Darby Crash and recording the first Germs album, you know, plus not True. To mention, you know,
Bikini Kill.
Her Bikini Kill, not to, the Gits, not oh, to yeah. mention just her insane rise and perseverance. But with Billy Idol, you can ask him about being part of the Bromley contingent and hanging out with the Sex True. Pistols and the Clash, you know, plus not hang out with Keith Richards and his insane story. So that's tough, man.
Who would you pick?
I'd probably pick Joan just because there's that whole like seedy side of LA and Kim Fowley. And like Billy Idol probably has some cool stories about hanging out with Susie Sue and, you know, hanging out yeah. with the Sex Pistols. But see, Billy Idol's actually very good at keeping certain things private, but still giving some material that's interesting. You know, he's very good at that. He really is the quintessential. Billy Idol is the quintessential rock star in the positive concept of a rock star. Like, he's what a rock sure. star should be. You know what I mean?
Can we have him on the podcast?
I'm going to ask. Well, the answer, it would probably be an interview at the podcast. The answer will probably be no. But listen, we got Daryl Hall, Em. I was thinking about the Daryl. Hey. We got Daryl Hall. That was pretty freaking awesome, you know? So I'm going to ask, yeah. you know?
Yes.
But with Joan, there's so much that she's private about. Plus the whole Darby crash and the Germs thing. And also, of course, mm-hmm. Joan Jett recorded songs with the Sex Pistols. The original Joan Jett band was the Sex Pistols. Did you know that?
I did not.
So before Joan Jett recorded her first album, she did some demos and some other tracks not with John Lydon, with the other members of the Sex Pistols. And actually, a lot of those songs, well, there's an EP called like the 1979 Demos or something like that, that has okay. those recordings. There's also a compilation called Flashback that's got a bunch of the tracks that she recorded with the Sex Pistols on it. And it's super good. So you could ask her about that cool. too. So anyway, that'd be real cool thing. Plus, I've heard some rumors here and there, you know, and so if she had the answer, I'd like to hear the answer to those rumors. So we'll see. Well, actually, we won't see. We'll never see.
Hey, you never know.
And I said, and I'm going to pat myself on the back, then we'll move on. One of my most proudest interviewing moments ever was when I was interviewing Joan Jett, and I knew that she stole David Johansen's beer bottle, like way back in the day, you know? And so the way I cracked it open, more than most other interviews have, is I asked her about it, and that caught her off guard because that's not like a public story. And so then I got her to talk about how much she liked the New York Dolls, and then I got some personal stuff out of her, a little bit, more than most other people, more than we wanted to write a song that people could clap along to. Thanks, Joan. You know, great. Let's change aspects here. Talk about something that sucks ass. Tim Lambesis is continuing as he like dying. Not that I care about this band ever. But as the listeners probably knows, Tim Lambesis hired a hitman to kill his wife, but it was actually an undercover cop. And he went to jail for like 4 or 5 years, and then he got out. And then as he lay dying, went back on the road again, which is, you know, kind of not a good look for the other guys. Then about late last year, all the members of the band quit again. And then actually we missed a story, which I'm embarrassed that we did, is after all the other members quit, two videos were leaked online. And actually I've seen them, and they're actually pretty crazy. In one of them, Tim Lambesis is arguing with his wife and there's no sound. And then he gets in real close to her. And he's cute. They're clearly yelling at each other. Then he backs up and he starts punching himself, like in the face and in the arms, almost like an angry gorilla or something. And it's like pretty freaky. Then there's a second video where he's arguing with his wife again, and he flips over a table that she's sitting at, and again he starts punching himself, and it's freaky to see. Then not that long ago, actually very recently, two videos came online of him like kicking his dog and slapping his dog, and so anyways, Tim Lambesis did an interview with Loudwire, and he tries to portray himself as a victim, and he's like, well, I've got a restraining order against her now, and blah blah blah.
Jesus Christ.
Which I guess, you know, in a normal scenario you might say, well, there's two sides to every story, but here he literally hired a hitman to kill his first wife. So he doesn't get much. He's got a very bad background, and so he says the band's going to continue. A couple of questions here, Em, is clearly he's got mental problems. Would you agree that he's got severe mental problems?
Yeah, I don't think he's well.
So, is this news? You know, like let's say, and if someone's at Punk News, we pretty much have the not a rule, but a guideline that like let's say I don't know, let's say Keith Morris isn't married. Okay, he's not married, so I'll use him as an example. Let's say Keith Morris got divorced, and like that's the whole story. We want to report on that because that's not really related to music, you know. And we do want to draw the line somewhere, you know what I mean? So that's not like news, you know. So is Tim Lambesis having severe mental health issues and going through a second or third divorce? Is that news, Em, or are we being cruel? You know what I mean? Or gossipy?
Well, like, this is something that, like, the videos are of abusive behavior. So I think that puts it into a different category. I don't really think that we should, like, I don't think that it's news necessarily, because, like, the band is effectively done. Like, I don't think, yeah, he says it's going to continue, but I really don't think they have any support after everything, you know, that's happened with them. And, like, this, like, I didn't see the dog video. That's sounds horrific. I did see the video where
Agree, but I think the wife videos are way,
I wasn't done.
Yeah, I think hitting a dog is bad, you know what I mean? But I think violence against human is worse, you know?
I wasn't done. I agree with you because I saw the video of him and his wife, and that is completely unacceptable in all worlds. Like, that is not okay in any stretch of the imagination, and not okay is, like, you know, a gross understatement. So, it's the thing of, this is abusive behavior. It shouldn't be rewarded. And I don't think that, like, it's one of those things, right, where it's something that it's important for people to know about. But it's also, like, covering it well can be tricky, because there's a fine line between covering it and being exploitative. I don't think the story we did is exploitative, to be clear, but it's just, there is that really, like, thin line where it's very hard, or it can be easy to overstep, because again, you don't want to show that you're giving support to this kind of behavior, because it's just real, really, really, really bad.
Well, how is us reporting on it hypothetically giving support to that behavior?
I don't think it is. It's just, people will get like publicity from it potentially. So it's like, okay, for example, like, Marilyn Manson has a bunch of, I guess, abuse allegations against him, and there are sites reporting that he is going on a tour. Why? Like, why? Why do that?
Why is he going on tour? To make money?
No, why report it? Why give him space?
Oh, well, I don't know if I agree that Marilyn Manson is probably a creepy guy, and you probably, you know, I wouldn't support him. But I'm not comfortable with us being the arbiter of what people should or should not read, particularly in a moral context, particularly where someone hasn't been convicted of something, you know, or found liable under a civil action. What I would say is, with the Tim Lambesis thing, is we're at least, him saying the band is not over is definitely music news. Therefore, it's right within our realm. You know what I mean? And also, I think at least him being abusive, at least the first time, or him hiring him in to kill his wife, is definitely news, because, like, let's say we covered TV, like, and the Bill Cosby thing came to light. You definitely want people to know who they're watching, giving their money to, you know?
Definitely.
So let's go back to Tim Lambesis. Let's say he didn't say he resurrected the band, and let's say he was just having domestic. Yeah, I think that's where I might draw the line. Like, let's say Tim Lambesis going to jail, definitely news, because that was the first time anyone found out about that. Him getting out of jail, news, because that's a continuation of that story.
Yes.
Now, let's say he goes into his private life, and he's still got mental health issues, and he's got domestic issues. Is that news? Probably. Is that punk news? Probably not. You know what I mean? Because that's just a domestic, private domestic abuse thing. And are we really helping anyone by posting that? Not really. Are we providing, and if anything, we might be hurting the victim, you know, by making that right. public. Or, you know, are we providing useful information? Not really, because in our fictional scenario, the ban's over and everyone knows that he's abusive, you know. So that feels exploitative to me, I think. But
right.
him announcing that the band is back or will continue, that's definitely music news. So we definitely would cover it, I would think. So yeah, that's how I feel about that. But it's a fine line. You know what I mean? It definitely, like, I'm thinking of an artist here's another example. I'm not going to name names. There's an artist I really, really like. There's not a question of domestic abuse or anything, but he had a severe mental health breakdown after taking too much acid, and he's taken a lot of acid, you know. Is that news? Maybe. I don't know. You know what I mean? Is someone going into the rubber room because he took way too much acid and might be permanently damaged? Is that news? Is that punk news? You know? I don't know. Difficult. On one hand, you say, well, yes, it is. It could be, because it shows that the band is pretty much over forever. But on the other hand, you say, that's not really punk news, because you don't know that the band's over and he's having a real hard time. And us making it a public thing, that's making his life more difficult. And do people really need to know that? You know, probably not, you know.
Right.
So I don't know, man. I don't know if there's one rule. I guess it's kind of a totality of the circumstances, frankly, you know.
I think it's, if it's going to hurt somebody instead of help somebody, then, like, somebody who needs help, then.
See, but then what if the person, and that makes it even more complex. Like, let's say Bill Cosby does something real bad again, you know. If we were TV, would we report on that? Because he needs help, but he's a bad guy, you know? So how do you handle that?
I don't think he needs help in any way, shape, or form.
You don't think Bill Cosby has severe mental health issues?
I think Bill Cosby's a monster.
Well, I agree. I agree. But you don't think he's mentally off?
I mean, for you to do those things, I don't think you're... with all of the tools.
How about Marilyn Manson? Like, let's say Marilyn Manson tries to commit suicide. Would we report on that?
No.
Why not?
That's a personal matter.
Hmm.
Like, well, because in cases like that, it's okay, well, if I had something like that happen to me, how would I feel? And I'm not famous, but, like, you know, but how would I feel if that was the only way, you know, or how would I feel seeing that kind of while I'm going through something really rough? And it's one of those things.
So even if someone's a bad guy, we'll say, then you would not report on that. And no. There's no right or wrong answer. I'm just trying to, I'm thinking this through.
I wouldn't.
Hmm.
No, like, it's one of those things where it's, I don't think that that's necessary. I think that oversteps. Like, I think that goes into kind of exploitation. Rather than, like, oh, you know, this person's having a bad time, it's a circus kind of thing.
Yeah, that probably is exploitative, probably.
But what are your thoughts?
I don't even know. I've confused myself here.
Oh,
What was the central question that I was getting at? You know, because we've gone off on a bunch of tangents.
Oh, is it news?
Tame Lambesis is definitely news in him saying... We're still a band. Definitely news, no question. And so then you have to report on the stuff associated with that, you know.
Definitely.
And so yeah, I think it's the totality of the circumstance kind of thing. So I don't know. I love these hypothetical questions, and I do pride punk news, in that we do hit the harder news more than most of the music websites. You know, the thing, particularly what's his name? Anti-Flag. What's his name?
Justin.
Just Insane. You know what I mean? I mean, that's news, right? Is that
news? Is news.
But why is that? Oh, well, it's definitely news because the band ended because of his bad acts, and we're still looking into his bad acts. You know what I mean? So one last question. What if Justin Sane is accused of doing something bad again 3 years after the band is broken up. Is that news?
Ooh.
I'm saying yes.
I think
Because that's kind of like a Bill Cosby scenario, you know, in that, like, he doesn't really deserve any protection from us.
No.
You know? And
God, no.
So yeah. Anyways, you know, there is no such thing as a true news standard, because no matter how you spin it, your personal sense of morality is going to affect it one way or another, you know? And so the best we can do is really just trying to eyeball it, I guess, you know? Yes, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, Tim Lambesis sucks. Andy Flagg sucks. Justin Sane sucks. So yeah, man. But here's something that's cool. I'm going to play a song. The cool song that I'm going to play is by a real cool band. The band is called Rotary Club. And their new album is called Sphere of Service. And I'm going to play a cool song by them that I'm going to name in a second. And that cool song is off their new album called Sphere of Service on Iron Lung Records. And the track I'm going to play is Safety Line. Here, Em. Oh, tell us about one of your favorite Canadian bands, Em.
Oh, yes. So, Fucked Up. They're back to doing hardcore for at least a 7-inch.
For at least two songs.
They've released the first one, which is Disabuse. And it is great. It's like there's a little spot at the beginning where Damien like dedicates a song to his daughter, which is really, really nice. And then it just fucking rips, you know. It's so good, you know, when going back to the beginning of the episode, when we were talking about politics and how things feel dark and, you know, there's always a shred of hope, that's what this song feels like to me, because it's loud, it's angry, it has a very, very strong message, and it's something that feels very like restorative, you know. Like, there are people who are like angry about the way that like people are being treated, and the way that like just the way that the world kind of is, and not only just the band, but the people who have supported the song, and I guess the band as a whole, you know, like just everything. So I really like this song. Fucked Up Doing Hardcore is great. I really hope the 7-inch turns into a full album. That's just, you know, kind of putting it out there, hoping it'll happen, but great song. What do you think?
Yeah, I love effed up. I love effed up doing far out stuff, and I love when they do hardcore. There was talk of them doing a return to basics hardcore album. I think it was around the Glass Boys era, and
Yeah.
I think it was Damien wanted to do it, and Halachuk didn't want to do it, but I'm not exactly sure that's right. I would love for effed up to do a straight up hardcore record, or maybe a hardcore record with some really far out experimental elements here and there, which I think that would be one of the
Ooh.
best records ever, frankly. So anyway, this single is real cool. I love it. Effed Up has been insanely prolific this past year. Like, Effed Up was known for being super prolific way back when they started, when M was two. I mean, I remember like ordering an Effed Up 7-inch like every month for a while. Like in 2003, they put out. Well, but in 2003, they put out 1, 2, 3, 4 7-inches and an EP in 1 year. And then the next year, they put out, let's see here. In 2005, they only put out 2 7-inches. And then in 2000, no, they put out three. And then in 2006, they put out a 12-inch, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 7-inches and Hidden World.
Holy.
That's crazy, you know what I mean? And so it was real fun to be an effed up fan at that time because they were just constantly putting out like all this far out stuff, you know. And then kind of after Chemistry of Common Life, they kind of slowed down on that aspect. But then starting in 2002, they've put out since 2002 they put out I mean I'm sorry 2022 they've put out 1, 2, 3, 4 Five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 releases, including Oberon, Year the Horse, and three full albums. So that's pretty crazy. That's almost a release every other month, which has been totally awesome. And I'm loving it. And also I think F-Dub is one of the bands where they're better the more prolific they are, but of course. What I'm saying kind of doesn't make sense because by the time an effed up record comes out, it's actually like 2 years old and they've been working on it for like 2 years. Like the way effed up does stuff is they're working on like nine things at once and things kind of come together here and there because they're not recorded traditionally with everyone in the studio all at once. They're kind of recorded in drips and drabs here and there, which I think is an interesting thing about them.
Yeah.
But effed up stated that before the release of Let's see, just before the release of maybe it was Apricot, they said they're going in hibernation for a while. What does that mean, Em? What does that mean?
I think they're going to put out maybe a couple more singles, and then they're not going to tour.
Ever again, you think?
No, just for like a couple months, maybe because they're recording.
See, I think they've been very prolific. And so I think they're going to be less prolific going forward, at least for a couple of years. I'm hoping that means Halachuk is working on more Zodiacs because we're so close to being done, Evan. And the Zodiacs are probably my favorite stuff they've done. There, of course, Oberon was. I mean, I wish Oberon was so awesome. I almost wish they just called it a Zodiac because it was so good. It kind of. So
Was.
let's see. There's 1, 2, 3, 4. Five, six, seven, eight, nine zodiacs, M. There's only three zodiacs left. They gotta make it, M. They gotta make it.
I think they will. They'll get there somehow.
How maddening would it be if they didn't make it, M? We've got nine down.
Yeah, or like they keep them and then they release all but one, and then the one they release after they stop being a band.
Well, that would be kind of cool, honestly. Kind of like if the listeners, well, the probably don't remember, Chumbawamba recorded an EP about the death of Margaret Thatcher, like 10 years before she died. And they said, you can pre-order it now, and then we're not going to release it until after Margaret Thatcher dies. And so they actually released their final EP, like literally like 10 years after they were broken up. And it was recorded like 15 years prior. And I don't think I'd release an album around someone's death. To me, that's just bad mojo. But I think it was right. Cool. They had a delayed release that was kind of like this final thing that had been recorded years before. So I think it'd be real cool if the last thing F-Tip ever released was a Zodiac, which makes a lot of sense, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So do you think it's the end of F-Tip or just another pause or what?
I don't think it's the end of the band. I think it's just another pause. I don't think they're going to disband until something happens, like, where they kind of have to, you know? I think they're going to keep going as long as they can.
I'm actually looking on Bandcamp. They sold a lot of copies of this. Like, let's be, like, fuck, like, F'd Up was huge around Chemistry Common Life and David Come to Life. And for whatever reason, they kind of declined in popularity after that, sadly. And they're still a popular band, but they're not on the front page of Pitchfork like they were for two years. And so I'm actually kind of surprised at how many copies of Disabused they sold. So that's kind of cool. I mean, I'm just looking on Bandcamp. They sold a lot of copies of this record. So that's pretty cool.
That's good to see.
I'm comparing it to Someday. Let's see here. Actually, they sold a fair amount of copies of Someday. They did sell more of the 7-inch than Someday, but I guess the one other thing though, Em, is they put out literally 4 albums in the span of about a year and 3 or 4 months. Is that too much to digest? Because I own all these records, but I still haven't digested them all, you know? And also, why don't they put out 7-inch versions of their track with Hallucination? Like, why is that digital only? It's so maddening, Em. So maddening.
Those covers are so good.
Just put together. See, this is what annoys me about F'd Up. And F'd Up doesn't, I don't own F'd Up. They don't have to do what I think they should do. But, like, they'll put out, like, these really rad things, which, you know, they could do, you know, 300 copies. The fans would like it, and that's some easy money. But they just won't do it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're somewhat frustrating. And they could even delegate that to someone, and they'll still say no. You'll not do it, you know?
It'd be too expected.
At time, it's almost as if F'd Up is too cool for F'd Up. You know what I mean? Like, so maddening. Of course, that's the thing with F'd Up is they're a maddening band, and that's part of the charm. And this is pure basic speculation. I mean, and people have talked about this time after time after time. How do you think Damien still wants to be in F'd Up? Because, you know, ever since Glass Boys, it definitely seems like he's been willing and even ready to walk, you know, on what was the record that was like really far out?
Those Your Dreams.
Like, he only sings on like half those songs. And he even talked about, I didn't write any music or any of the lyrics. And, you know, maybe it's time for me to step aside. Now, in Disabuse, I believe he did write all the lyrics. So do you think that's just him being a true artist and he's not really ready to walk, but that's just how he felt in that moment? Or do you think they're begging him to stay? Do you think there's a power struggle? What do you think the deal is? And I realize at this point, discussing the internal mechanics of F'd Up is kind of a cliche, but I'm still fascinated by it. You know, like where do you think Damien is in relation to the band, and where do you think Halichuk is in relation to the band, and why is Halichuk always so grumpy?
I think because he has a lot of ideas and he wants to work on all of the ideas all at once, and he can't. I don't think there's a power struggle within the band.
Oh, I do. I definitely do. But go ahead.
Okay. I think Damien still wants to be involved in it. I think with Dose Your Dreams, maybe that was just kind of a moment in time where he didn't really want to be a part of it, or maybe he wasn't like as inspired by the music or something. Also, like, kind of what was going on in his life at the time, you know, maybe that was when Turned Out a Punk was like really big, or he had that like touring show, like the food and interview show. So maybe he was just like too busy to like actually kind of be there and write the music and do something like that. Because I mean, he's he's done a bit of everything, which is like really, really awesome. So that would be my baseless speculation. And I think he wants to be in the band. What do you think?
I think there is a power struggle. I think it's not as I think during perhaps Glass Boys. Well, see, Glass Boys apparently is all about Mike and Damien's relationship. But and I remember Tank Crimes, Scotty of Tank Crimes said it's his favorite album because he's known them ever since 2002, and Glass Boys is kind of the open diary of those two. But for
Oh, sure.
me, not being aware of the internal facts, I thought that record was kind of boring and aimless, and I didn't really understand what it was supposed to be. And plus, the music's kind of tamer, you know. And so that was kind of a reaction to the power struggle of After David Comes to Life, you know. And so I think since perhaps Dose Your Dream, that this is all based on speculation, which is what we do on the show, is
Yes.
I do think there's a power struggle, but I think it's not an active power struggle. I think during David Comes to Life or just after, it was like a battle or a chess game, you know. Now I think basically it settled into effed up being Halachuk the director, if you will, but he can't control Damien. And so like it's kind of almost kind of like a Jane's Addiction thing, not in the sense that it's a bunch of not in the sense that Perry Farrell is very difficult to work with, but Jane's Addiction without Perry Farrell is not Jane's Addiction, you know, who is nothing. So even if the other guys write the music, if you don't have the singer and the spark of that singer, it's just not quite the same. And so even though perhaps the power struggle is over, the people that hold the important elements are separated, and it's maybe perhaps somewhat difficult or uneasy for them to work together to a degree, you know, particularly when one guy might be willing to walk, you know. And if one guy's
Sure.
willing to walk, if you're the other guy, you don't want to be like, please don't walk, please don't walk, please don't walk. You kind of have to act like maybe you don't care as much, or you're willing to let that person walk, even if you don't want them to walk, you know.
Right.
And I think that's the status of where the band is at right now. Although we could be totally wrong. I mean, I remember when we were Architects of Self-Destruction, people were like, oh, so-and-so hates so-and-so, or blah, 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 blah. And they were totally wrong. Totally wrong, you know, or they didn't do this because of XYZ. And it's like, no, we didn't do that because so and so was in jail, not because of or whatever, you know. So that kind of basic speculation usually is wrong, but not always. That being said, man, I think they're going to go into hibernation for about a year and a half. I think maybe the era of the album by Effed Up is over, but that doesn't really bother me because their 7 inches are awesome and their Zodiacs and 12 inches are awesome. So if we don't get another effed up album and we only get like shorter fragments, that's fine with me. Totally, you know.
Right.
I will say it's notable that their most recent record, Someday, was self-released, as was Another Day, although One Day was on Merge. That kind of is
Yes.
a bit revealing as well, you know. So yeah. We shall see. I didn't realize we were gonna get that much discussion on effed up because
Baseless
we
speculation.
talk I we probably talk about effed up a little bit too much on the podcast, but I just love the band so much, Em.
Yeah, I mean, the world needs more like good fucked up content.
The world needs more weird, aggressive music
Yeah.
that isn't faux tough guy, which I'm so sick of. You know what I mean? That's what we need, and that's why effed up is kind of cool. Here's something else that's kind of cool, Em. There are two new, actually maybe even three, since
Too
we
new.
discussed this on the podcast last time. Two new punk rock bowling shows, club shows, that is, have been announced. And the one that I'm really excited, well, actually, a couple that I'm really excited for, but one of the ones that I'm really, really excited for is the adverts, Em. Although I think you and I both guessed that that was going to be the announcement, didn't we? We probably did, right?
That was, I think, the last podcast, and we all did kind of baseless speculation, and I think you had the adverts.
Yeah, so it's going to be adverts headlining along with Dracula's Fun Club, no, Fan Club, and Nico Bone. So I was very excited to see that. Nice and spicy. Well, not spicy, but awesome. Like, I love the adverts. And it's not really the adverts. It's TV Smith and some dudes playing the adverts music, which, fun. I mean, I'd love if Gay Advert was there, I don't think she does music anymore. So anyway, listen, I'll take it. That's going to be pretty cool. Also announced was Street Dogs, which I don't really care about the Street Dogs that much, but The Briefs, who I like a lot, and Beton Army, the popular French oi band, and a band called Mystery Actions. Also announced, I'm not sure if you got this one or not, was Mariachi El Bronx, who I don't really care about, Piñata Protest, don't really care about, La Misa Negra, don't know that band, Crazy in the Brains, and Mexican Standoff. And that's at, see, where's that at? That's got to be a Container Park, right?
This was
grand. Oh, that's cool, man. That's a pool party then. Pool parties are always fun at punk rock bowling. And of course, the adverts are at Backstage Bar and Billiards, which is where, Em?
By the El Cortez.
Literally across the street from El Cortez. Literally the closest building to El Cortez, which is very cool. So I'll definitely be at that one. I shouldn't say definitely, because Punk Rock Bowling is now doing this thing where they've got different levels of general admission, and I always get like the normal general admission. I'm not gonna spend extra money, but if you spend extra money, you get early access to the tickets, which is annoying to me. But on the other hand, most punk rock club shows don't sell out at least in the first week or two of sales. And the ones that do usually aren't ones that are like the 7 Seconds show might sell out, but I just don't care about 7 Seconds. Then I just don't care. I'm supposed to, but I don't. I don't care. And
Negative Approach? Yeah.
I'm going to be heretical here. Negative Approach is cool. I like Negative Approach a lot. Okay. I've seen them live probably like 10 to 15 times opening for other bands. I like them, but every song is the same, man. Every song is exactly the same. And I get it. It's fast.
Fair.
It's intense. And between every song, John Brand is like, check it out, which I like. But to me, like Negative Approach, I mean, I'll take adverts of Negative Approach every day of the week. I'll take, you know, Crazy in the Brain of Negative Approach every day. And now that is a competition. Well, it is a competition because you can't be two places at once at punk rock bowling. So anyways, I like Negative Approach, but I've seen them so many times and every song's the same. And I feel people are scared to admit that. Although maybe people really do really love every Negative Approach song, even though they're all exactly the same. So anyways, any hot takes on these announcements?
Adverts is going to be cool.
Yeah, it will.
And then with the other ones, I've never seen Negative Approach, so I'd like to see them.
They're cool. I mean, everybody should go see them. They're awesome. I'm just saying I've seen them literally like 10 times. So, and I would see them again, but not at the expense of adverts or Crazy in the Brains, you know? So.
Oh, no, for sure.
Are you excited about Street Dogs then?
I'm excited about Beton Armé.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think they're going to be really good.
Are they from Quebec? Are they French or are they from Quebec?
I believe they're from Quebec.
Way back. Wah-ha-ha.
Yeah, they're from Montreal.
And how do people from Quebec, what do they think of the actual French? Like, do they think they're better than actual French or worse or equal to?
I think they think they're completely different from people from France.
But they speak French.
I think they're closer. I think they're close. They think they're closer to them than they are to like someone who lives in Ontario.
Do you feel as though people from French Canada are dicks? Because I think most people do.
It depends where in the province you are. I think if you're in like Montreal, there are some of the nicest people that you will ever meet there. Like some of the nicest people. Some of like if you go to more of a like a residential area, and you're not fluent in French, people are gonna be a little, you know, they're gonna give you a side eye kind of thing, like, oh, what are you doing here? But for the most part, like, people are very kind.
Here's a dumb question. Being that technically Canada is owned by England, is French Canada also owned by England?
Yep. Well, yeah.
But they don't like the English.
They don't. Because, well, several reasons. Like, there's the Plains of Abraham, battle. There's the Acadian genocide. There's, like, a bunch of bad stuff that's gone on. And that's why there's a huge movement in Quebec to be their own like sovereign nation, basically.
Does everyone in French Canada speak English, or they don't?
Not everyone, but most people do.
But they insist on speaking French.
Well, okay. So if you are in Montreal or I've never been to Quebec City, so I can't speak on that, but I believe Quebec City is also like this. You will have signs in French and in English. The farther you go into the province, you do not have English anywhere.
If I went to French Canada and like went like, "Oh, Quebec, whoa," would people enjoy that, or would they be mad at me?
No. You would get you no.
What if I wore a beret and a striped shirt and rolled around in a bicycle and had a baguette on the basket? Would people enjoy that, Em, or would they be mad at me?
That'd be really funny. I think they'd just be like, ah, it's fine. Well, because there is like an island off of, oh, where is it? I don't want to speak out of turn. One minute, let me see. France Island in Canada. There is an island. There it is. There is an island in Canada that is a self-governing territorial overseas collective of France. And it
Oh, so
is just off of Newfoundland and Labrador.
what's it called?
Saint Pierre and Miquelon.
Does anyone live there, or is it like just an empty island?
Nope, people live there.
So they're technically French citizens.
They are French citizens.
And what kind of money do they use there?
I think they use do they use a euro in France? I think they use the
You know,
same
France
currency.
definitely, France is euro, definitely.
I'm pretty sure they use euros. Because like if you go there, you have to like show your passport and stuff. I have
That's
never
weird.
been, but like, yeah.
Is it like a happening place, or is it like the boondocks? I'm looking at it right now. It looks pretty small.
I think it's pretty small, but like, I think it has quite a an atmosphere to it, you know?
Only 5,000 people, 6,000 people live there. That's not that big.
Well, it's just on an island.
I
But
still can't get
yeah.
over that. I mean, I can't. It astounds me that Greenland is in Europe, considering the fact that, I mean, I never realized how close Greenland is to Canada until I looked at a globe, because it looks different on a map than a globe, you know? And I looked at, like, there are parts of Pennsylvania that are further east than Greenland, which means Pennsylvania is further east than Europe in certain places, which blows my mind.
Isn't that nuts?
That is nuts. It's like totally nuts. Like, so, and I don't mean this is, I know there's a whole whacked out thing with Trump, and
Excuse me.
I'm not even commenting on that. But like, how is Greenland in Europe? It's clearly in North America. Like, I don't understand that, Em. I really don't.
Europe got there first.
I guess that's the answer. And who owns Greenland? Is it not? Is it a Denmark or somebody?
I think it's Denmark or it's Finland or something.
Which
One
I
minute.
didn't even know till recently. I thought Greenland was its own
Territory.
thing, but it's not.
It's Denmark. Yeah, you're right.
I think there's not a whole lot going on in Greenland, though. I think it's pretty empty, isn't it?
But it's an autonomous country within the state. I'm not actually sure. I've never looked into Greenland, to be completely honest.
I think it's almost totally empty, as opposed to Iceland, which I was at briefly, which was cool. Iceland's
Iceland's
cool.
so pretty. It looks so pretty.
The people are very stern there, though. Very stern, you know.
They're used to harsh
I
winters.
think that's what it is.
Yeah.
When I was trying Netherlands, I was in Iceland for a hot minute, and they're like food is that way, you know, or you may exchange euros here, you know, like ah, you know.
Efficiency.
So anyway, Iceland's cool. Em, anything else you want to talk about tonight? Any other countries you want to investigate?
I'm looking at a thing on Greenland facts now. I want to see if there's anything really cool here.
I'm always
Let's
fascinated.
see.
Like, here's an example. I'm always fascinated, you know, I'm always interested in archaeology, but also anthropology, in that, like, Bjork, who's from Iceland,
Yeah.
has what people might call Native American features or whatever. And the reason is because when you go really far north, it's all like a similar lineage. And people don't think of it that, you know what I mean? Like if you go to like North Russia, they look what I would call Native American, but they're not Native American, they're Russian. And if anything, Native Americans look Russian because they went across the Bering Land Strait like what 30,000 years ago or whatever. Like it's fascinating that like if you look at the clothes of people that live in like like I'm just gonna pick some Tixie Russia, which is like extremely North Russia. Their clothes look like Native American, or as Canadians people say, First Nations clothes, which is very fascinating to me. Like, when you think of Russians, you think of people that look like Putin, not Native Americans, but they look like that. Isn't that fascinating? I'm always fascinated by that.
They were here first.
But it, so isn't it trippy when you really think about it? Like Native Americans all the way down in like South Argentina, they're from Russia originally. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it's really, really cool.
Like 30,000 years ago, people trekked by foot from snowy Russia. And it did happen in like a week. It happened in 10,000 years. But like, isn't that crazy that people trekked by foot all the way from Siberia, Russia, all the way down to Argentina and Peru and like Tierra del Fuego, all the way down by Antarctica. Like, isn't that insane?
It's a long walk.
It blows my mind. Like you really can't comprehend it, you know?
No.
Also, imagine being the Vikings and landing in Canada. Like how that must be mind-blowing on both sides of the equation. Like, there's a bunch of First Nation people, and they see these like tall, skinny white dudes with like axes, like roll up on boats, and they're like, what's going on? And then you're like a Viking and you think you're gonna hit China or something, and you wind up in some other continent that you didn't even know existed. Like, that must have been insane.
And then you make wine.
And then you go back. Like, you don't even establish a settlement, which blows my mind, you know?
Oh, they did. They were there for a bit.
Yeah, but then they left. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't come back.
Yeah. Because it was too cold.
I guess.
What imagine is it called? Going, oh.
Imagine yeah. going from, imagine going from friggin' Norway all the way to Canada on an open-topped boat.
Oh, that would be a rough go.
You were talking about some hard ass dudes, man. Those dudes are hard ass. But the funny thing is that, like, Swedish people are always tall and skinny, and you don't think of them as being like hard asses. But they were like the original hard. Well, they weren't the original hard asses, but they were pretty hard ass, you know.
That they were. Yeah, they were very hardy.
And not to jump around, you know. And then we'll wrap this up shortly. As I said, I love archaeology and archaeology and anthropology, but I love archaeology. Is like, you know, you read about all the ancient Egyptian pharaohs 5,000 years ago, a long time ago, nothing in the grand scheme of things, but 5,000 years ago. And you talk about like Sekenenre Tau or Ramjed or Amenophis III, like absolute badasses. Like, you read about, like, you know, and I'm not saying it's a nice thing to do, but like, you know, I conquered this territory and I beat these guys up and we killed these guys. We're badasses. Yeah. And then you realize they're all like 4'11". They're peewees. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? And you see the mummies, and the mummies are so tiny. You know, and of course people shrink. But like back then, people were literally like men were like 5'1" back then. You know what I mean? And you know, you read about like they're like, oh, you know, Amenophis III, he's the ultimate badass, the great shining sun disc. Don't mess with him, he'll kill you. He's super tough, and he's like 120 pounds. You know what I mean? It's fascinating. It really is. I don't know why. It's fascinating to me.
I could be tall.
And if you were in ancient Egypt, you would be the tallest person there.
I would rule.
Maybe.
Probably not.
And if you could go back into any time, time would you go back into? And I will give you the see, that's an easy question for men than women, because if women went back to a certain time, they'd get treated like total trash. You know, like now, if they went back in time into now, they would get treated like total trash by a certain president. But like, mm-hmm. I'll say you get to go back in time, but you don't get treated like trash. You know what I mean? What time would you go back to?
I think I would go to ancient Greece. Yeah, because they'd have good food. They seemed to kind of know what was up, you know, kind of like sanitation wise. They had like all sorts of arts and poets and Sappho and cool things, cults that weren't bad. What about you?
I would either go back to ancient Rome or ancient Egypt. Probably Rome, because as fun as it is to read about Egypt, the day-to-day aspect of Egypt pretty much probably sucked ass, frankly, you know? Whereas Rome, Rome had people had entertainment. Rome was huge on entertainment, huge on arts, you know, huge on science, huge on building roads, huge on inventing working toilets, you know. So I think ancient Rome, I actually think if you went back to ancient Rome and you could like speak Latin and fit in, I think ancient Rome would not be nearly as different as you might think it was. Except for, I think they would, there'd be like really weird things that would seem really odd. They're just the culture of the day. Like, you know, he, in current times, like if someone sneezes, you say, God bless you or whatever. Like if you step back, I guess like a really weird thing to do if you're not familiar with the, with the idea behind it, you know? So I think if you went back to, or like, I'll try to think of another example. Like if you, trying to think of stuff we do that's like actually odd if you really think about it. Like even like tipping is kind of weird, maybe. You know what I mean? Like the price is what you guess it should be, you know. So yeah. Something like, you know, something like that. So in ancient Rome, I think ancient Rome would be like one of my favorite archaeology pieces is they found what is literally a fast food takeout place, like, or a diner. Like it's a place that like it's an outdoor stand that's got a picture of a pig, a chicken, and a cow on it, and it literally has stools that you would sit at and order what you want, and like just like a normal diner. So I think if you went back to the ancient Rome, it would be not that much different than you think it would. Like another example.
Oh, that's cool.
Like if you read like Roman plays and Roman poetry, like a lot of the jokes really translate really well. Like Aristophanes, he's Greek, but Aristophanes stuff,
he's Greek.
Like, but like those jokes make total sense in a modern context, you know? So I think if you went back to ancient Rome, it actually wouldn't be that different. And I think the air would smell like totally different. Think food would taste totally different, you know? But I think it'd be kind of cool to check out. So I would probably go back to ancient Rome. I think ancient Egypt, for unless you're super rich, it like sucks totally. Whereas ancient Rome, you know, doesn't suck as bad if you're not totally rich, you know.
I thought of another thing for Greece too. You have Barrel Guy.
Who's Barrel Guy?
He was like that philosopher, and I don't remember his name, but he like.
Oh, get out of my son!
Yeah.
What the hell's his name?
Barrel Guy, because he was just walking around and like, haha, look at me. Well, actually, don't look at me. I'm just kind
of Diogenes.
What about my day? Yeah.
Diogenes. The only place to spit in a rich man's house is in his face. Yeah. Do you think Diogenes was like a real like anarcho kind of punk kind of guy? Or do you think he was just insane and like a total jerk?
I'm choosing to believe more anarcho-punk, more like what you're doing bothers me and I'm going to talk about it in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, man. Ancient Greece was probably crazier than ancient Rome. There was a lot of crazy shit in ancient Greece. You know what I mean? Like Diogenes, like living in a trash can in the middle of town and getting arrested because of it and stuff. You know, like. What's going on there? It's totally weird, you know.
Cult of Dionysus, which is crazier than the cult of Bacchus, too. Wine and debauchery.
Yeah, you know, I think of like the circuses, Circus Maximus and stuff. And as fun as that might actually be to see, I bet it actually would be like horrifying to you and me because horses getting maimed every race, people getting killed every race. Like it sounds really fun to watch in the abstract, but I bet when you actually saw it, you know, people pissing in the stand and like having sex in the stand and like fighting in the stand. Like I bet it was actually super gnarly to tell you the truth.
Oh, it smells so bad too.
Probably did, honestly.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, Em, you want to play a song? What do you want to do?
Sure. I'm going to play Remedy, which is by Womb, who are out of Montreal. They're a post-hardcore band, and this is off their debut EP, Hiss.